We are doing a thing right now, a series on men and women, and we're looking at kind of the differences, and there's some, obviously huge similarities, but there's some differences too. And I have found over the years a little made-up story that I have used in several settings to kind of drive this point home of the difference of men and women. And this week especially, we're going to look at the issue of, it's actually wrong in your program, I messed up, it wasn't Kelly's fault, it was my bad. But this week we're going to look at the issue of dating, marriage, and singleness, and how that all fits together. In other words, how we've been talking about men and who they are, and women and who they are, and we've kind of looked at them like, you know, two different chemicals. And they're in different rooms or whatever. And so now we want to take the nitro and the glycerin and put it together and see what happens. But this is an article that I have really enjoyed. I want to give credit where credit's due. It's by Dave Barry. Dave Barry's a comedian. Complete Guide to Guys. It's a very short book. No. This section is called She Drives for a Relationship, He's Lost in the Transmission. Let's say a guy named Roger is attracted to a woman named Elaine. He asks her out to a movie. She accepts. They have a pretty good time. A few nights later, he asks her out to a dinner. And again, they enjoy themselves. They continue to see each other regularly, and after a while, neither one of them is seeing anybody else. Then, one evening when he's driving her home, a thought occurs to Elaine. And without really thinking, she says it aloud. Do you realize that as of tonight, we've been seeing each other for exactly 6 months? There is silence in the car. To Elaine, it seems like a very loud silence. She thinks to herself, geez, I wonder if it bothers him that I said that. Maybe he's been feeling confined by our relationship. Maybe he thinks I'm trying to push him into some kind of obligation he doesn't want or isn't sure of. And Roger is thinking, gosh, 6 months. And Elaine is thinking, but hey, I'm not so sure I want this kind of relationship either. Sometimes I wish I had a little more space so I'd have time to think about whether I really want us to keep going the way we are, moving steadily toward, I mean, where are we going? Are we just going to keep seeing each other at this level of intimacy? Are we headed towards marriage, toward children, toward a lifetime together? Am I ready for that level of commitment? Do I even really know this person? And Roger's thinking, so that means it was, let's see, February when we started going out, which was right after I had the car at the dealer's, which means, let me check the odometer. Whoa, I'm way overdue for an oil change here. And Elaine is thinking, he's upset. I can see it in his face. Maybe I'm reading this completely wrong. Maybe he wants more from our relationship, more intimacy, more commitment. Maybe he has sensed, even before I sensed it, that I was feeling some reservations. Yes, I bet that's it. That's why he's so reluctant to say anything about his own feelings. He's afraid of being rejected. And Roger's thinking, and I'm going to have him look at that transmission again. I don't care what those morons say. It's still not shifting right. And they better not try to blame it on the cold weather this time. What cold weather? It's 87 degrees out. And this thing is shifting like a garbage truck. And I paid those incompetent thieves $600. And Elaine is thinking, he's angry. And I don't blame him. I'd be angry too. Oh, I feel like I'm so guilty putting him through this. But I can't help the way I feel. I'm just not sure. And Roger's thinking, they'll probably say it was a 90-day warranty. That's exactly what those scumballs are going to say. And Elaine is thinking, maybe I'm just too idealistic, waiting for a knight to come riding up on his white horse when I'm sitting right next to a perfectly good person, a person I enjoy being with, a person I truly do care about, a person who seems truly to care about me, a person who is in pain because of my self-centered, schoolgirl, romantic fantasy. And Roger's thinking, warranty? They want a warranty? I'll give them a warranty. I'll take their warranty and stick it right up there. Roger, Elaine says aloud. What? Says Roger, startled. Please don't torture yourself like this, she says, her eyes beginning to brim with tears. Maybe I should never have. Oh, I feel so. And she breaks down sobbing. What? Says Roger. I'm such a fool, Elaine sobs. I mean, I know there's no night. I really know that. It's silly. There is no night and there is no horse. There is no horse, says Rogers. You think I'm a fool, don't you? You think I'm a fool, don't you? Elaine says. No, says Roger, glad finally to know the correct answer. It's that I need some time, Elaine says. There is a 15-second pause while Roger, thinking as fast as he can, tries to come up with a safe response. Finally, he comes up with one that he thinks might work. Yes, he says. Elaine, deeply moved, touches his hand. Oh, Roger, do you really feel that way? She says. Which way? Says Roger. That way about time. Oh, says Roger. Yes. Elaine turns to face him and gazes deeply into his eyes, causing him to be very nervous about what she might say next, especially if it involves a horse. At last she speaks. Thank you, Roger, she says. Thank you, says Roger. Then he takes her home. She lies on her bed, a conflicted, tortured soul, and weeps until dawn. Whereas when Roger gets back to his place, he opens a bag of Doritos, turns on the TV, and immediately becomes deeply involved in a rerun of a tennis match between two Czechoslovakians he never heard of. A tiny voice in the far recesses of his mind tells him that something major was going on back there in the car, but he's pretty sure that there's no way he would ever understand what. So he figures it better if he just doesn't think about it. This is also Roger's policy regarding world hunger. The next day, Elaine will call her closest friend, or perhaps two of them, and they will talk about this situation for 6 straight hours. In painstaking detail, they'll analyze everything she said and everything he said, going over it time and time again, exploring every word, expression, and gesture for nuances of meaning, considering every possible ramification. They will continue to discuss this subject off and on for weeks, maybe months, never reaching any definitive conclusions, but never getting bored with it either. Meanwhile, Roger, while playing racquetball one day with a mutual friend of his and Elaine's, will pause just before serving, frown, and say, Norm, did Elaine ever own a horse? We're going right into the mothership today. We're going to talk about this whole thing about male and female relationships and how they come together in dating and marriage. The Bible talks about this same thing. In quite almost the same humor. I mean, in Bible language, this is funny. Proverbs 30 says, there are three things that are too amazing for me, four that I do not understand. The way of an eagle in the sky, the way of a snake on a rock, the way of a ship on the high seas, and the way of a man with a maiden. That's funny if you're a first, you know, century person, but not so much. Now, I picked that scene on purpose. Because if you remember Nacho Libre, that's the scene where he's starting to get attracted to her and he gets her the big salad and he takes those corn chips and he goes and blows them all over the place. The way of a man with a maiden. It is amazing. We're in a series right now on this whole thing of God creating us on purpose. God designed male and female. And it's a thing of beauty and it's a thing of train wreck too. And we're trying to look at God, what were you thinking? Why is this? How does it work? How does it work that we have two genders and how are we supposed to celebrate that? If you're new with us, I want to remind you a little bit about where we've been at, just real briefly. First of all, we'll be looking at primarily Genesis 1 and 2. Our theme verse is Genesis 1:27, where it says, "He, in the image of God, he created them, male and female, he created them." And so we've been looking at that passage, and then we blow it up in Genesis chapter 2, where we see Adam and Eve. Adam is created first. He's given a job in the garden. And then God looks at Adam and says, it's not good that he's alone. And so he creates Eve. And what we take from that, and the way we understand the rest of Scripture to speak, is that there is a difference between men and women. It starts right there in Genesis 2, where Adam had, first and foremost, is he had a relationship with God. Then, after the relationship with God, then comes this responsibility. And when he has that responsibility, it's said that he's alone. And he needs a helper. He needs someone to come alongside. He needs a complement, someone to be there with him. And so Eve is created. So Adam has a relationship in the context, Adam has a responsibility in the context of relationship. Eve is different, however. Eve is created different. First, she's taken out of Adam's side. She's brought over here somewhere. God creates her. So first there's a relationship between her and God. And then God brings her to Adam, and she's created for Adam to not be alone. So she's created as a relationship in the context of responsibility. Larry Crabb says it this way. He talks about this. I'm just going to read halfway. We've read this before. That what it means to be a man is that deep within him, he wants to make an enduring contribution to God's purposes in his world and will be deeply valued by others, especially his wife, as a reliable source of wise, sensitive, compassionate, and here's the word, decisive involvement. Involvement. That's what guys, go do it. Women, femininity, it says, Crabb says, that something within a woman's being that enables her to confidently and warmly invite others into relationship with God and with herself, knowing that there is something in each relationship to be wonderfully enjoyed. Those two words, men, involvement, women, invitation. And you know, it's not 100%. I don't have any invitation for people. Of course not. But there's more of this involvement thing. There's more of that for a guy. And we talked about this. What it means then is men and women are created as a complement to one another, like puzzle pieces to fit together. Complementary view. Now, today, we're going, like I said, right to the mother lode. Men and women moving towards this thing called marriage. And this idea, as my mentor says, a cosmic joke that he put a man and a woman that close to each other with such potential for strife and all kinds of things because of the differences, and yet they're called to live together in harmony and beauty, actually. So we want to take a look at that. But before we start that, I got three disclaimers. And the reason for that is, no matter what I'm saying now, and no matter what you've heard other places, you will still believe the Hollywood fantasy. You know, that's what I love about the movie Shrek. You know, because it takes that fairy tale and it just flips it on its end. And I love that. Although at the end they're kind of off in the sunset too. That's why I like that there's Shrek 2 and they're still fighting. So it works for me. But not the Caroline final time. But the concept is that no, there is no sunset. There is no rising music. You know, what happens to the fireworks when I kissed them? It didn't go and all this kind of stuff. And that's what you got drilled in your head. That's what it means to be in a relationship. It's there. And I'm going to do everything I can, these disclaimers, to knock it out. Number one, disclaimer number one, marriage does not solve all of your problems. It just rearranges them. I say this to every couple that I do premarital with. It doesn't solve your problems. It just rearranges them. Let me give you an example. When I was single, I lived in a house with, there was always five of us. Uptimes there was 13 to 15 other guys. And it was an absolute zoo in this house. We play full Czech hockey in the living room with a real puck. I mean, this was crazy. We had the living room, and then there was like a dining room, and then there was like another dining room. It was an old house they kept adding on to. But so we had this full deal, and it was insane. And so I thought to myself, can't get any worse than this. I like the guys around me, but I'm feeling a sense of loneliness. Feeling a sense of loneliness. Like, I wish I could be around people who are committed to me, care about me, in a way different than the guys do. And so I got married. Now, I've got a wife. She's great. She's sitting right there, so I have to say that. But that's true anyway. I'd say that anyway. And I got three boys, and they're great, and I love them. They're sitting around somewhere. I can never be alone. I can never be alone. Now, what I crave is to be alone. Just 30 seconds. I mean, I have to lock the bathroom door. You know, I want to be alone in here. I want to be talking to me now. I want to do this. I just want to be alone now. And so there's this sense where I had this problem before, and now I got this other problem. So if you think that you get married, it's going to fix all your problems. Yeah, a few of them will get changed, but they come out in other ways. Marriage doesn't solve your problems. Zig Ziglar has said this, and I think this is very profound. I'm not a real big motivational speaker guy. Zig was really into that. But I think this is good. He says, you can marry the right person and treat them wrong, and they become the wrong person. Or you can marry the wrong person and treat them right, and they will become the right person. It's pretty profound. Then he said, more important than marrying the right person is being the right person. That is huge. More important than marrying the right person is being the right person. I'm pretty convinced that I could pick two people here out of random. They both loved Christ and are both, you know, understood basic concepts of English, that I could train them how to work together some biblical concept of marriage, and we could have a fairly functional marriage. So those of you who are just stressing out, I wonder if they're perfect for me or whatever. Guys, if you meet the perfect woman, do not marry her. You will ruin her. Just let her go to somebody else, okay? You'll mess her up. Now, I've already married the perfect woman, huh? One for... Yeah, I'll take it. Second disclaimer. Single people are not incomplete. There's this view that if you're single, you're not yet completed. All right? That's wrong. It's wrong. It's nowhere in the Bible. It's good for Adam to not be alone. That's true. So he creates another gender. So I'm glad we have both genders. The world would be a very, very nasty place with only women or only men. Right? So God creates both genders. It's a beautiful thing. But you're not incomplete. There's not like something, you know, you're not half a person. You're not that. I think our society sometimes tells you that. That's not true. In fact, Jesus and Paul, got to confess, my two biggest hero in the Bible, heroes, Bible, say you're better off. Jesus is speaking to his disciples in Matthew 19. And he's talking about marriage. The Pharisees came up to him and said, you know what? Can you just divorce your wife for any reason? At that time, culturally, you could say three times, I divorce thee, I divorce thee, I divorce thee, and it was done. I burned your bagels, you're done. Gonna go get me a younger model or one that doesn't burn bagels or whatever. And that's the way women are treated. So they come to Jesus, they ask him, can we do that? Can we continue to leave our wives for any reason? It's a trick question because in Deuteronomy, Moses did allow them. But he said, what the point was, is if you're gonna do that, at least write them a certificate of divorce so that they can get remarried. Because otherwise, a woman alone in that culture was destitute. So give her a certificate of divorce so she's legally separated from you. That's what it says in Moses. So Jesus has this banter with them saying, no, you can't do that. You can't just leave your wife. And then listen to the disciples. You think the disciples are really godly people until you read stuff like this. The disciples said to him, if this is the situation between a husband and a wife, it's better not to marry. That was our buddies, James, John, all those, these heroes of the faith. That was their view of wives. Whoa, you mean I can't just leave them? Jesus says, not everyone can accept this word, but only those to whom it has been given. For some are eunuchs because they were born that way. Others were made that way by men. And others have renounced marriage because of the kingdom of heaven. The one who can accept this should accept it. Wow. Paul says in 1 Corinthians 7, now for the matters you wrote about, it is good for a man not to marry. Wow. But since there's so much immorality, he's talking sexual immorality here, since there's so much of that, it's, you know what? Each man should have his own wife, and each woman her own husband. And he goes on later to say in verse 7, I wish that all men were as I am. Paul was single. Jesus, single. Paul, single. 70% of hope, single. I know that. Most of the people in this room, they're single. You're just like Jesus and Paul. It's great. It says, but each man has his own gift from God. One has this gift, another has that. It's a gift to be single. Now, some of you are saying, what? I don't want to be single. I have no desire whatsoever. I want to be married. That's okay too. Nothing wrong. Paul says nothing. You really want to be married? That's fine. That's fine. He goes on to explain, you'll have more trouble in this life if you're married. You will. Hey, life's a trade, man. You know, I don't think you can't have it all. You can't. So if you're going to get married, then you've got responsibility. You've got another person in your life. And it is fun and it's exhilarating and it is frustrating. Because they don't do everything exactly the way it should be done or like the way you want it. You know, that's What's the deal? Third thing, or let me read this thing from Crab. One of the assumptions many single adults make is that they experience more of a sense of loneliness than a married person does. And in one sense, that is very true. Every night I go home to my wife and I climb into the same bed with her. The single adult does not have that level of companionship. But I think the single person ought to be aware of the fact that there is a sense of loneliness in living in a fallen world. That loneliness is shared by everyone who is honest. There is a God-shaped hole that only God can fill, and other relationships, we'll see that in just a second, were not designed to do that. And because I live in a fallen world, I don't see God as clearly as I should. And every relationship I have, every one of them is not quite right. And there's something wrong with that. And that's right. I should feel that way because I live here. Someday, in glory, when we're done with this earth, it will all feel right. You know your best moment you've ever had in your life? Like that was just for 2 milliseconds, everything felt right. Everything felt like I should be in the Garden of Eden. That's what it'll feel like all the time then. Everything will be right. Every relationship will be right. Bible says there'll be no more death or mourning or crying or pain, but this side of it, there'll be death, mourning, and crying and pain. And that's normal in marriage or out of marriage. And the lie is, I'm single. If I was married, there'd be no more death or mourning or crying or pain. Come to the Tricolor household. There's death and mourning and crying and pain. There is. It's just part of it. Can't escape it this side of eternity. Third and last disclaimer before we get into this. Marriage is not a source for life, but a resource to point you to God. Boy, it sounds so similar and it's so wrong if you don't get this right. Therefore, marriage can be the biggest form of idolatry you can have. Like I said, God has put within you a God-shaped hole. One of the things that I had to wrestle through, I dated a girl in high school. I broke up with her after my freshman year, and that was a mess. And I didn't date again until I dated Carol. And that was 4 years later. And one of the things that I had, it doesn't mean I didn't try. But get that plate and keep swinging, boy. Even a blind squirrel finds a nut every now and then. The thing about it was, is I had to feel that God was the first place in my life. God has to be the first place in your life. One of the things that resonated through me is I prayed for a wife. And I did pray for a wife. And some of you are here and you're praying for a wife, praying for a husband. That's okay. But be careful as God is answering that he's not saying, why would I give you a replacement for me? He won't answer that prayer. But gracefully so. Gracefully. If you're saying, I need this. This will fill me up. Nope. God says, I am gracefully not going to let you go there until you put me in that right place. When I'm there, then you can do as you want. But until then, I'm going to protect you from that. And some of you might be in that place right now where you're getting protected. That's a good thing. Okay, now, here we go. With all that, that's just pregame. Now, the joys and dangers of dating / marriage. First question. Is dating biblical? Is the whole concept at all in the Bible? I looked in the back of the book here where they got the little fancy words. Looked under D, dating, nothing. Therefore, the answer is no. Dating is not biblical. End of sermon. Let's take another offering. Is dating biblical? The answer is no. Why? Because it wasn't their custom. It's not the way they did it. They either had arranged marriages or you just got together with someone, you just basically took them as your bride. It was a way different culture. Now, it was cultural. I'm not saying it's right or wrong. It just was cultural. The only passage I can find that has anything to do with dating would be 1 Corinthians 9:5. And it's maybe somebody afterwards. Nobody first serves, but maybe you guys are smarter than those guys. It says, Paul speaking, and he says, don't we have the right? He's single, remember? But he says, I could get married. He says, don't we have the right to take a believing wife with us, as do the other apostles and the Lord brothers in Cephas. And it's an interesting phrase, isn't it? Take. This is a kind of a caveman Eldrin.
Take a wife and drag her by the hair back to the cave. You're mine.
No. Something there we're saying, I could ask a lady to be my wife. Now, that's pretty much all they did it in that culture. I was part of a campus ministry called the Navigators. They were nicknamed the Never Daters. Not like Campus Crusade for Couples, which many of you are a part of. But the Never Daters, the buzz phrase was, beware the third date because he's going to ask you to marry him. You know? Ice cream. Movie. Ooh. Ring. Hello.
Can we take one? That's all I can really find. So this whole concept of that, but our culture, we don't have that. Our culture, we do date, and I don't think there's anything necessarily wrong with that. It just complicates matters a lot.
Because you're not married, but you're kind of liking each other, and you're kind of a thing, but you're not married. It's really confusing. So, what happens, the way things go, the spectrum of things is this, is you're a young lad, let's say, and you find a lass that you find, you know, she makes you go woo-hoo-hoo or whatever when you see her. Like my wife always does. And you start to, you know, hang out a bit. That's the new buzz phrase. We're not dating, we're hanging out. That's beautiful. How long have you been doing that? 9 years. Get on with it, boy. You know what I'm saying? Okay, you're going along, and then you have, somewhere in there, you have the dreaded DTR. The dreaded define the relationship talk. Okay? You know, usually guys are fine with the whatever, but the ladies are like freaking out what's going on, and so we got to have this little bit of a define the relationship talk. DTR for short, also known as certain death for men. It's just painful. Carol and my DTR happened on a swing set in northeast Minneapolis. It's the place where I asked her to marry me too because it was so humorous. It took us, was it an hour and a half or 2 hours? Oh gosh. To basically say, I think you're cute. What do you think? I think you're, you know, hot stuff or whatever too. That took us an hour and a half to get out. The way it was finally answered was, she was trying to clarify where my feelings were at, and I didn't really know exactly where my feelings were at. And we kind of went back and forth, and I was trying to clarify with her. And finally I said it this way. Guys, you might want to write this down. This is good. I said, if I were to tell you that I wasn't interested in you, that would be lying. Men? The use of the double negative, yes. If I was to tell you I wasn't interested in you, I would be lying. I mean, she has to take out her little guide to English dictionary and say, what the heck does that mean? It took us an hour and a half. It was painful. It was painful. We went from that talk where we basically said, I kind of like you, you kind of like me, but this is nothing exclusive. We went there, went this 6-week period. That was painful for me, and she was completely at ease. I never have quite figured that out, because now my brain is doing the Elaine thing for whatever reason, going back and forth. And we went there to a time where I asked her to our first real date, which was breakfast. Is that right, or did we go see the movie first? Movie, yeah, the movie was first, okay. So I asked her to a movie, and I said, I'm going to take you to a movie. And she goes, well, wait a minute. You maybe don't know this about me, but I'm pretty sensitive about movies. And I said, no, this one will be safe. She said, no, I don't really like a lot of violence. I said, nah, well, there is, you know, one death, but, you know, no big deal. But a lot of sexuality and stuff. I said, no, trust me. And she's like, I don't know, and kind of the whole way there. We went to the remake of Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. It was our first movie. I figured I was pretty safe on this one. And then shortly thereafter, we had a breakfast. And that breakfast is where we finally decided we were going to be exclusive with one another. We were only going to date one another, and that's where it was going to be. And I distinctly remember saying to her, just want to let you know that my aim in this is that it would lead to marriage. It was the scariest thing I ever said to her. It was more frightening to say that
than it was to ask her to marry me or anything else. It's kind of one of those Mufasa, whoo, say it again, you know? Whoo. Scary stuff. I mean, it really was. And I remember you said that. I should be pretty scared right now. You know, and she was looking right at me, which made me not feel so good about that. But, and that was important. And men, let me just tell you this right now. Men in the room, when you get to that DTR time and you decide when you're going to be exclusive, if you're not, you don't have to be always talking marriage. That gets so old. I'm not saying that. But if you're not communicating to her, my intentions are that this would lead to marriage, you are leading her on. Now, you don't have to explicitly say it as clearly as I said or anything like that. But otherwise, you're just confusing her where this is going. And if she were my daughter, you would have your intentions pretty... I don't have any daughters. God, by His providence, I don't know what it is. I own too many guns or something to be a, have a daughter. I don't know what it is. But you would tell me, too, what's your intentions here, boy? You'd sit down. Oh, gosh. I do that with some of you all, too, when you date some of the women here at Hope. Now, from then, you go to the engagement period. You're in this dating, and you're trying to honor one another, and it's very important you treat each other rightly. The rule that I use, and I encourage you with this, is that if I were to, if Carol and I were to break up, that I could go to her wedding, look her groom into the eye, and say, I did nothing to defile your wife. That was my goal. Men, make that your goal. Honor women. In not just physically, in the sexual area, in the emotional area, in everything. You didn't do anything to really mess with them. Until you marry them, then no. Don't ever, just honor them. Honor women. So then the question comes, you get engaged. The engagement means you have set a date. And that's what engagement means. You're ready to go that way. And then you ask the question, when is a couple married? I have this conversation all the time. And that, you just got to look back at Genesis chapter 2. Genesis chapter 2, verses 24 and 25 says, and we've looked at this many times, says, for this is the first wedding ceremony, Adam and Eve, for this reason a man will leave his father and mother, be united to his wife, and they'll become one flesh. The man and his wife were both naked, and they felt no shame. What is a wedding? How does it get happen? There's four things. Real simple. Number one, you leave your other family. You're no longer under the authority. You're no longer saying this is my primary source, is your other family. So your parents have to know. Say, I'm leaving now. I'm going off. I'm going to be a big boy. I'm be a big girl. I'm leaving. Okay? So you leave. You can ask him for money. It's good. But you got to leave. Then it says, be united. Or like the King Jimmy says, cleave. I like that cleave. I don't know what it means, but it rhymes with leave, and so it works. Leave and cleave. In other words, there's something that happens and where you're united in some type of ceremony where you declare before God, human witnesses, and especially your family, your decision to live together for the rest of your lives. That's it. We're one time, here we go. We're going to come together. We're going to get married. This is it. We're making a vow, covenant to one another. Then it says, and then only it says, and they became one flesh. What does one flesh mean? Nobody ever says it. Thank you. Somebody finally has the guts to say it. It means sex. It means more than that, but it does not mean less than that, okay? It means more. They became one flesh, certainly. But it doesn't mean less. In fact, I think that's why it says the last verse, verse 25. The man and his wife were both naked, and they felt no shame. In every life, they were vulnerable. Every other life, they had extreme vulnerability, and they were with one another. I think that's what it means to be married. Boom. Simple. You find somebody you like here during the connection time, come on up front, we'll do it. Boom, get you done. Now, it's not a big deal. Get your families here, we'll get a couple witnesses, get the state of Minnesota to give you a license. It's right next to the hunting licenses, you're good to go. Now, that's how it starts. Now, before, many of you in this room are thinking about this. Can't tell you how many people I've prayed with that are either contemplating a relationship or are in a relationship or are married, that I prayed with on the first service during the communion time. And that's where you're at. Now, let me just tell you, last few minutes we have together, what you're getting yourself into. Biblically, what are you getting yourself into? Spend the rest of our time looking at this one passage, the most famous passage in the Bible on what it means to be married, Ephesians chapter 5. I want to read the whole thing in context. And I'm not going to get nearly enough time today to delve in this as much as I'd like, but I just want to hit you with the high points. It starts in verse 15. I'm reading this from the English Standard Version, a little bit different They get a little bit better on some of the words. Look carefully then how you walk, not as unwise but as wise, making the best use of the time because the days are evil. Therefore, do not be foolish, but understand what the will of the Lord is. And do not get drunk with wine, for that's debauchery, but be filled with the Spirit. What's he saying here? He's saying if you get filled with wine, if you drink and get drunk, you'll do things that are not consistent with the way your real values are. So when you do that, that wine, that alcohol, it consumes you and it makes you do things. He says instead of that, be filled or be drunk on the Holy Spirit and let it control you. Instead, be filled with the Holy Spirit. And then he says, here's how you do that. Here's how you take a shot of the Holy Spirit. Here it is. Here's shot number one. They're all ing words. Addressing, this is, you want to know how to get filled with the Spirit? Here's how you do it. Addressing one another in psalms, hymns, and spiritual songs. God talk comes out of your mouth. You talk God? Is God your first interest? I like golf. I like hunting. I like fishing. But is that what first comes out of my mouth? Is that how I address one another? That's what it means to be filled with the Spirit. Second thing, singing and making melody in the Lord with your heart. There's something there about song, about music. That's a theology of why we sing as a group. Because there's something about this. Now, some of you make a joyful noise unto the Lord. Heavy emphasis on the word noise. That's fine. Something about it. Then it says, giving thanks always and for everything to God the Father in the name of the Lord Jesus Christ. Do you live a life where you thank God? You're constantly thanking God. God, thanks for this situation even though it's really, really hard. Thanks for this difficulty I have coming up. Thanks for this relationship that right now is broken. Thanks for that because I know you're going to do something. I don't like what it's in, but you're doing something in my life, maybe this other person's life, it's going to work out. Thank you for that. Do we have that kind of attitude or do you have a complaining attitude about everything? That's how you be filled with the Spirit, is by giving thanks. And then he says the last one, submitting to one another out of reverence for Christ. Do you live your life constantly trying to get underneath the other person? Underneath any people you're around, you're constantly trying to get underneath them? Or is it your thing? Do you enjoy doing this? This is submitting to one another. And then verse 22. Every English version of the Bible gets this wrong. It's the only place I feel confident enough in my original language to say this. It's wrong. The verb isn't there. It says, submitting to one another, reverence for Christ, wives to the husbands as to the Lord. That's what literally it says. Some of your versions in front of you have italics. Submit is in italics. This whole thing is about how to be filled with the Spirit. He's going to talk now about marriage relationship. That's the context. Wives, submit to your own husbands as to the Lord. By the way, that word submit, we'll look at that, what that means. There is some sense of protection or being under, but it doesn't mean men and women. Wives, don't submit to any men, your husbands. Now, why, before the women hit for the exits here, first of all, I didn't write this. Second of all, we'll get more to what that means. So just hang on. For the husband is the head of the wife, even as Christ is the head of the church, his body, and is himself its Savior. Now, as the church submits to Christ, so also wives should submit in everything to their husbands. Let's move to the husband's role to become more clear. Husbands, love your wives. That's your only command. Guys, men who are going to be husbands or are husbands, love your wives. And then he gives an analogy. It's over here. The rest of the whole thing's an analogy. Just as, here it comes, Christ loved the church. All the people, not the building, all the people, and gave himself up for her. The her is the church, not the wife. That's where it gets a little confusing. That he might sanctify her, having cleansed her by the washing of water with the word. And just that's what Jesus did. He died, he gave up his own life on the cross so that he could wash you all. That's your example, men. If you want to be a husband, that's your example, is Christ. What he did for the church. And why did he do that? So that he might present the church to himself in splendor, without spot or wrinkle or any such thing, that she might be holy and without blemish. Men, if you want to be a husband, that's your calling. That's your calling. People often look at this passage and say, oh, it's so bad for women. And maybe it is. Maybe that's a hard thing. We'll look more at the word submit in just a minute. Guys, what your role in life is so self-sacrificing that you move and you're willing to die if necessary for her, that you're moving towards her to help her to become everything that she can be, and like a rose, she opens up. If you're not willing to do that, don't date my daughter. It says here that he does that so he can present to himself the most beautiful bride. That's what Jesus' goal is. He wants to make you beautiful. Now, husbands, that's your role then, is to make your wife as beautiful as she can be. And if you're not trying to do that, don't date my daughter. In the same way, husbands should love their wives as their own bodies. He who loves his own wife loves himself, for no one ever hated his own flesh, but nourishes and cherishes it just as Christ does the church, because we are members of his body. And then he quotes Genesis 2 again. Therefore, a man shall leave his father and mother, hold fast to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. This mystery is profound, and I'm saying this refers to Christ and the church. Now we come back to you, ladies. However, let each one of you, that's the husbands, love his wife as himself, and let the wife see that she, a new word, respects her husband. Respects her husband. This word submit now is, there's a new word here, respect. In other words, what does it mean? What does it ultimately mean to submit? Does that mean that Carol never looks me in the eye and says, no? Absolutely not. I am a charismatic, winsome salesman. I can sell ice to an Eskimo in January. I am good at that. And any of her to look me in the eye and say, you are full of hoo-ha. What does it mean? It means that her and I know above anything else that we are on the same team. We are on the same team. We're not on opposite teams. We're on the same team. And she's respecting me. And what I take, my theory on this is about maleness and femaleness. Males crave more than anything else respect. What a man wants more than anything else, it's for someone to slap him on the butt and say, attaboy, way to go. Nice shot. I heard that a few times as I was shooting ducks this weekend. Nice shot. And they were good shots, actually. You want to hear that. Men, you crave that. Some of you in this room are craving to hear your dad say one time, I'm proud of you, boy. I heard my dad say that to me. And the hardest thing I ever heard him say to me was after I got picked up for underage drinking at the age of 16. And he looked at me and said, I'm very, very disappointed in you. Man, kick me, beat me, slap me, do whatever you want. What you just did is hurt me deeply as a man. As a man. He basically said, you're a coward. And that's what men fear. We fear being found out that we're cowards. Women, however, what does it say that they're to do? They want love. They want someone to say, I am attracted to you. You are an attractive person. You're beautiful on the inside and out. I'm drawn to you. You've invited me and I come towards you. You're worthy of it. That's what women fear more than anything else. It's just the opposite of that. That people find me not attractive. See me as something that's repulsive or whatever. And Paul says there's a way to solve that. Do your job. Husbands, love on your wives. Adore them. You can't love your wife too much. You can worship her, that's not right, but you can't love on her too much. And women, respect your husband. Now, let me close out with this. Six implications from Ephesians chapter 5 for dating and marriage. Number one, do your own verse. Simple. It says, husband, love your wives. Wives, submit and respect your husbands. It doesn't say, husbands, make sure your wives are submitting and respecting you. It doesn't say that. So do your own verse. Let the other person do theirs, okay? And no checking in on them. They'll check in on themselves. Thank you very much. Number two, be the right person. We talked about that before, but it's most important that you are getting your life from Jesus Christ. Otherwise, you will try to make your marriage, your dating relationship, your future dating relationship, your idol. It will happen. Number three, in dating, do not get ahead of God's ordained order. Leave, cleave, and then be united. Our culture flips it 100% on its opposite. Be united first, live together, check out, see how it's doing. Yeah, maybe then cleave, and then last talk to the families and get that all worked out. God put it that way, not because he's a killjoy, but because he wants you to enjoy all of this in the safety of a marriage. Now, in dating and marriage, men, I don't like to use this word lead because it sounds like male dominance, and I don't mean that. But you are the ones that are to be involved. You're the ones to move. Now, I'm going to say something. Probably get in trouble for this. You can email me. My email is johnpiper@bethlehembaptistchurch.org. Men, there are a lot of ladies in this room. That's all I'm going to say about that. Number five. I think you know where I'm going with this. You want to find a spouse? This is a great place to find a spouse. If I was single and walked in here, whoo-hoo-hoo. When I walked into churches, a little side point here. When I walked into churches when I was single, my first question, and if I pushed every one of you, you'd say the same thing. You'd say, where is she? Where is he? He's here somewhere. Maybe he's under the pew. He's around here somewhere. Where is he? It's a great place. There's a lot of people here. Bump into her. Put a little hope birthday cake in her face and see what she says. Men, take the initiative. Ask the ladies to do something. Get to know them. Women, champion your fella. Champion them. If they want to hear from you, yes, they'd like to be corrected. They need that. But the first thing they want to hear from you is, you know, honey, I'm proud of you. Just warms my heart to hear that. I'm proud of you. Now, here's the 27 things we got to work on. But I'm ultimately proud of you. It's a slow week. It's only 27. Last thing. Don't make your relationship, your dating relationship, your idol. God created it to be a resource and never a source. This table, what we're going to move to, is indication of that. We don't bow at the altar of marriage. Marriage, in fact, is an illustration of Christ in the church. It's all about Jesus from beginning to end. This table represents that as we move to a time of worship. The bread signifies his body, which is broken for you. And the cup represents his blood that was shed for you. And we celebrate communion here at Hope once a month or more often to celebrate that. And so during worship today, at any point in time, you can get up, come down front, rip off a piece of bread, take a cup, go back to your seat, or you can sit down here, or you can pray with. There'll be people down front who love to pray with you, or in back, or upstairs, a couple tables, love to pray with you about anything at all. You can do that anytime you want during the five songs we have. And then we don't ask that you're a member of this church. You don't need to be a member of any church. Just ask that you're a follower of Jesus Christ. Ask the band to come forward now, and they're going to, while they're setting up, why don't you just take a moment and just be with the Lord on your own. And just thank him for what he's doing in your life. Thank him for this meal you're about to eat and what it represents. Take a moment and be with the Lord.